Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Ksubos Daf Ayin Ches. We begin the eighth perek, Ha'isha Shenaflo, and we begin with the Mishnah at the very top of the Yomid. The Mishnah begins, Ha'isha Shenaflo Lo Nechosim. If a woman gets property, it could either come to her through an inheritance, or it comes to her through some sort of a matana, that she is now the owner of these properties, and these came to her Achalotisaris, before she became an Arusa. So a woman has properties that belong to her before she's an Arusa. So everybody agrees, Modim Beishamu Beishilo, that if she gets married, as Rashi says, Vinisarsa, now she becomes an Arusa. Of course, if she's not an Arusa, she can do with it what she wants. But once she becomes an Arusa, these properties which she acquired before she was an Arusa, everybody agrees, Modim Beishamu Beishilo, Shemocheres Vinosenes, that she has the right to halachically do with these properties what she wants. If she wishes to, she can sell them. If she wishes to, she can give them away to somebody, Vikayam. And in fact, that deal that she did, the gifting of this property or the selling of this property, is a valid deal. The husband can't say, hey, I want to retain the properties in your possession, so I get to eat the peris of those properties. No, since she acquired them while she was pre-Arusa, before she was an Arusa, so even though now she's selling them or giving them away when she's an Arusa, everybody agrees she has the right to do so. That's the ratio of the Mishnah. The next case in the Mishnah is Nof Nula Mishinis Arusa. What happens if the properties only fell to her while she was an Arusa? So she inherited something while she's in Arusa. So in this situation, Beisham Yomrim Timkar, it's still hers, 100%. She can do with it whatever she wants. If she wishes to sell it, give it away, she can do so. Beisham Yomrim Lo Timkar, L'chatchila, Beisham says, no, she's not allowed to. It belongs already to the husband. The husband has the rights to use these properties, to eat the peris of these properties, and the property itself does belong to the wife, but the husband has the right to use it, the usufruction rights, as we've said. However, in this situation, we have machloks lechatchila. Beishami says she can sell it lechatchila. Beisil says no, she can't sell it lechatchila. But everybody agrees. Even Beisil agrees. She imachra v'nasna kayim. That if she did sell it or she did give it away, then the sale or the transfer of the property is in fact a valid transfer. That's the second part of the Mishnah. Now, this is questioned. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, Amru Chacham of Rav Gamliel. The Chachamim questioned this in front of Rav Gamliel and said, how come? Since in the Erisin stage, the husband already is considered to be married to the wife, he's Kone the wife, he's Zocha B'isha, he has certain financial rights over the wife, so certainly if he has those rights over the wife, Lo Yizke Bin Chosim, shouldn't he also have the same rights over her properties? So in this situation, how come he's allowed to go and sell L'chachil according to Beis Shammai, and even B'dieved, though, it does work even according to Beis Hillel? So that's what the Chacham asked the Rabbi Gamliel. Amalham, Rav Gamliel says to them, listen, al hachadoshim onu boshim, in regards to properties that she acquires after she's in a suah, as Rashi says, shenof lo mishanises, even properties which she gets after she's in a suah, were not clear. Onu boshim is a poetic explanation that we really don't understand. How come in that situation, which we'll learn in a moment, everybody agrees that the husband is allowed to prevent the sale from taking effect because he has the usufruction rights, he has the rights to the payrolls of that property. So there, we're not sure why that should work, Rav Gamliel says. And now you're telling me, Elo Shatem, Megalgalin, Olenu Etz HaYishonim, and now you're saying that the same thing should apply to older properties, in other words, properties that she acquired while she was in Arusa. So that's difficult for us to understand. So therefore, Rav Gamliel said, don't question over here why, if the properties fell to her while she was in Arusa, that the sale is considered valid, Kayan, according to Beis Hillel, be the Ebed, but it's still a valid sale. Don't question us, because even after she nieces, we have a question of why that should be. So certainly, don't go and bring me a question how it can be that it should take effect, the sale should be at least good be the Ebed, while she's only in Arusa. Okay, so that's a discussion within the second case of the Mishnah. We now have another case of the Mishnah, third case of the Mishnah, that says what we just talked about. Naflu Mishanises, everybody agrees that if the properties fell to her while she was already a full-fledged Nesua, that both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree. In this situation, even Beis Shammai agrees, Elam Elam Modem, Shemach Ravinasa, if she either sold it or she gave it away, the husband has the right to prevent that sale from taking effect during her lifetime. Shabal Motzi Miyad HaLakuchos, and he has the right to go and keep the property in their possession and have the rights of usufruction to use the peris of that property. And finally, the save of the Mishnah, Achlo Nises V'Nises, if it fell to her prior to the Nisuin, but now she's in the Suah, V'Nises, so then in that situation, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Imachra V'Nosna Kayim. Rabbi Gamliel admits that in that situation, if she did sell it or give it away, she got it before she was in the Suah, but she's now in the Suah, the sale stands. In this situation, since she got it before she was in a suah, Rabbi Gamliel says, in this situation, her sale stands. Where question is? Amru Chanina ben Akavya. I don't understand. He says, Amru Lufnei Rabbi Gamliel. He says, the Chum said to Rabbi Gamliel, how can you say this? Ha'wil v'zocho b'isho, since certainly when she's in a suah, he has certain rights in the woman, so therefore, in that situation, how can you possibly say, shelo yizkeh b'nechosim, that he doesn't also get the rights to own the properties, in other words, to have the usufruction rights for the properties? Seems to be inconsistent. And Will says the same way he said before, Amulhem, Alachadoshim Anaboshim, this din, that while she's in a suah, the properties fall to her, everybody agrees that the husband can go and block the sale, at least that he should have the right still to use usufruction, to use the payrolls that come from this property. So that's questionable. So Alachadoshim Anaboshim, we don't fully understand why that should be. So Ella, we should say the same law applies to properties that she got before the Nisuin. So, therefore, it's not strange to say that even though the husband has certain rights in his wife when she's in a sua, those rights don't apply to items that she obtained before she was in a sua. Finally, we have the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Cholek, Rabbi Shimon disagrees with this, and he says, Bein nechosim lenechosim. He says the din is different between the different types of properties. For example, if it's nechosim hayidul lebaal, if the husband knows about these properties, and Rashi says, therefore, in that situation, he's expecting them to fall into his possession and to have the rights to them. So let's say this is a Yerusha. She has an elderly uncle that she's going to inherit. Uncle has no children, and she's the closest relative. There are no male nephews, so she's the niece, and she's the only one that's going to inherit this. So the husband has been looking forward to her inheriting this property. So then, it is so you do him lebal, so then lo timkor, Rabbi Shimon says. However, the amach or v'nosda, batal, and in that situation, if she were to go and sold them or give them away, they would batal, because the husband was expecting them, and therefore, since he has these rights, so the sale doesn't go through in the fullest sense, and he's entitled to the usufruction rights on these properties when they fall to her. But if it's something that's not known to the husband, which right now we'll understand is it wasn't expected to come to the husband, he didn't know about it. Tomorrow we'll discuss this more. As Rashi says, more mefarish, but with basically dealing over here with properties that he didn't expect to come into his possession. So in that situation, she lichatchila shouldn't sell them, lo simkar. However, if she did sell them, the husband wasn't really expecting them, therefore, if she in fact did sell them or give them away, so then that sale would be valid. Okay, so that's our Mishnah. We learned a lot from our Mishnah. And now we're going to discuss different parts of the Mishnah. So if we start off by discussing, where it begins, Maishno Reisha de lo pligi, or Maishno Sefer the pligi. Why in the Reisha, where the woman got the properties before she was a Arusa, everybody agrees that she's allowed to go and sell them after she's this Arusa? Even Beis Hillel says, L'chachila, she could do that. Whereas in the second part, what we call here the Seifa, in the second part of the Mishnah, it said that if the properties fell to her after she was in Arusa, then we already have a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says, yes, still l'chatchila, she can go sell them, but Beis Hillel says l'chatchila, she can't sell them, it's only b'di'evad that the sale is valid. So why should there be a difference? She's selling them in both situations when she's in Arusa. She's already under his domain. So why should there be a difference in din between whether they fell to her when she's in Arusa or they fell to her before she was in Arusa? She's selling them while she's in Arusa. So Amri Dvi Rav Yani, in the Beis Medrash of Rav Yani, they said, Reisha is dealing b'schusa noflu. They fell totally when she was herself. She was by her own self, in her own zechus, because she wasn't yet Narusa. Whereas the second case, the Seifa, b'schuso noflu. They fell while she was already Narusa, so they're under his domain, and that's why the din is different. Beis Shammai says, it's not different, but Beis Hillel says, it's different in that b'di'evet, the sale is only good, but not l'chatchila. So more questions. It says, "Im bischuso noflu, if it fell under his domain, so to say, when she's in Arusa already, so then ki machro v'nosna maikayim. So then, if it's under his domain, so then why should the sale be valid? We should say that no, the sale's not valid. He has the right still to the usufruction, to use the properties to get the peros benefit. So it says you're right. El reisha vaday bischuso noflu. In the reisha, the first case, which was the properties fell to a wall, she wasn't yet Narusa, pre-Arisin, so then everybody agrees in that situation that it's totally 100% in her jurisdiction. Those properties belong to her, and she can go sell them before the Nisuin while she's in Arusa. Everybody agrees to that, even Beis Hillel. L'chatchila, she can go sell them. However, Sefer, meaning the second part of the Mishnah, we're dealing over here with, they fell to her while she's in Arusa. So don't say that's totally under his domain. Ella, Amar, Biskusa, Amar, Biskusa. you say that it's half and half. It's still partially under her domain, and Arusa is not fully under the domain of the husband, and it's partially under the domain of the husband. And therefore, Beis Hillel says, L'chachila lo simkar, don't go and sell it l'chachila. However, b'di'evit, imach rovin nos nekayim, since it's partially under her domain, so therefore, if she did go and sell it or give it away, b'di'evit, we let the sale stand kayim. The sale or the transfer of the property is considered valid. Okay, so that's the reconciliation, if you wish, between the difference between the first case and the second case in the Mishnah. What we call here the Reisha and the Seifa. Seifa is always a comparative term. It doesn't mean the end. It means after the first thing that you mentioned. Seifa compared to case number two is Seifa compared to case number one. It's not objectively the Seifa because that would be case number four that we had in the Mishnah. Okay, then we continue with the Mishnah. We had said that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees on the second case. Rav Gamliel had a machlokis on the second case with the Chacham. The Chacham had questioned, and they had said, how come in this situation, when she's under the domain of the husband, the sale is considered valid, b'di'evit? After all, if she's under the domain of the husband, she shouldn't have the right to go and sell something, even b'di'evit. That's what the Chachamim are asking to Rav Gamliel at this point in time. Now, it's interesting. Our girsa over here is Amru Lefnei Rav Gamliel. The girsa in the Mishnah was Amru Chachamim Lefnei Rav Gamliel. I'm not sure why the word Chachamim is left out of here. In any event, the Gemara asks the question over here, what exactly were the Chachamim asking to Rav Gamliel? Yibaylu. They ask, was he questioning Rabbi Yehuda Alechadchila? Was, as Rashi points out over here, the machlokis over here between Chachamim and Rav Gamliel, Pligi Viamre, Amai Mocheris Lechadchila Le Beis Shammai? Is this question going on, how does Beis Shammai allow this sale to be still allowed Lechadchila in this situation? So the question is on Beis Shammai, possibly, that if she's in the domain of the husband, how could Beis Shammai allow it to be sold lechatchila? But b'di'evit, moduk Beis Hillel, but the Chacham would agree that b'di'evit, the sale is valid, or odilma, is this sale going on b'di'evit? As Rashi says, dilma, adi'evit nami plige, that they're arguing, the Chacham is saying that even b'di'evit, the sale should not be a valid sale, like Beis Hillel had said, u'boyle meimar, moch michra batel, and they would argue that the sale is invalid no matter what, even b'di'evit. So we turn to Ayin Ches Omud Beis, and we bring the answer from the following brisa. The Masoras HaShas in Os Aleph tells us this is Tosefta. We're going to continue reading this Tosefta later on in a moment. Right now we have the first part of Tosefta. Toshma, it says in this Tosefta, this brisa, the Tanya, tells us over there, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Amru lifnei Rabbi Gamliel, that the Chachamim questioned Rabbi Gamliel and said, how can this din be? Hoel vizu ishto. In both situations, when the man is fully married to the wife, she's in a suah to him, or she's only an arusa to him, in both situations, the din should be zu michra batel. She's in his domain, and therefore the sale should be invalid, whether she's an arusa or whether she's in a suah. So how can you say that the din is that b'di'evit, according to Beis Hillel, the deal is a valid deal? Now, this will be the raya that we're talking about b'di'evit over here. Nu, what does Rav Gamliel say back to them? Amalhen, he says to them, Al-Khadashim al-Moshe, we don't fully understand why when she's in a suah and the property's come to her, the husband has the right to prevent such a deal from going through. After all, it's her property. So, in that situation, we're not sure why the din should be, we're so to say embarrassed, we don't understand why the din should be that way. Elish, Atem Magalgil, Linus, and Shonaman, you want to make the same din apply while she's still in Arusa? So what do you see from here, from this response in this Tosefta, Shmamina, Di'evit Kamai, that they're arguing about whether the deal goes through, B'di'evit or not. So it's going on the opinion of Beis Hillel that he says, L'chachil, you can sell it, but B'di'evit, it's a good sale. Shmamina, from this Brisa, this Tosefta, we see that in fact, the statement that Acham made to Rav Gamliel was arguing about Beis Hillel's B'di'evit opinion that the sale is a valid sale. Tanya, we continue reading this Tosefta. He says, Lo kach heshivan Rav Gamliel Acham. This wasn't the response. You're incorrectly responding what the opinion was, Rav Gamliel, back to the Chachamim. We just said that he's saying that if we don't know and understand why the din should be that way, if they fell to while she was in a suah, so certainly don't say that the din should be that way if it fell to her while she was in Arusa. So that wasn't what the Rav Gamliel responded back to the Chachamim. Elakach heshivan. This is what he said to them. Lo. He says, your din is incorrect, that b'di'evit, the sale should, in fact, not be good, according to you. No, the sale should be good, b'di'evit. Why? Because imamartem b'nesua, if you're telling me that the din is by nesua, that if the woman sells it after she's in a suah, it fell to her while she's in a suah, and she goes and sells it while she's in the suwa, everybody agrees in that situation that it's not valid. That's because shekein bala zaka b'mitzios. So once she's in a suwa, the husband's entitled to any mitzios that she finds with ma'aseh there, and to her handiwork, anything that she produces, or b'afaras nedarah, and he alone is able to be made for a nedarim. So that's when she's in a suwa. There's a big difference between being in a suwa and being in a rusa. So why are you saying that if the din is that way while she's in a suwa, the din should be that way while she's in a rusa? Tomer b'arusa, shein bala zakai lo b'mitzios. So the husband doesn't have the same rights. He's not entitled to anything that she finds. He's not entitled to because he doesn't support her at that point in time. He can't be made for Nadarim by himself. He has to go do it along with the father. So that's what Rabbi Gamliel had responded to the Chachamim. The Brisa continues and says, Amr lo, the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Gamliel, Rebbe. They called Rabbi Gamliel their Rebbe. So, Machro lo, Achelo Nises. That's great in the situation where she sold them while she's in Arusa. We understand that there's a difference between being in Arusa and being in a Suwa. You're 100% right. We have no problem with that. However, what about the case where she gets the properties while she's in Arusa, but then Nises, then she becomes in a Suwa, and now V'yachakach Mochra, and now she goes and sells it. Mahu, what should be the din in that situation? Why would you say in that situation that she should still be allowed to have her sale be Michra Kayim? After all, she's now a full-fledged Nesua. So on that, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi, this is the way Rabbi Gamliel responds. He says, Amar lahu, avzu, mocheres, v'noseres, v'kayim. He says, yeah, you're 100% right. In that situation, where she acquired them while she was in Arusa, and in fact, she sells it while she's in Asua, the deal is a valid deal. So Amar lahu, Chacham said to him, I don't understand. Ho, v'zocha b'isha, lo yiskim v'nechasim. He's a full-fledged husband to her. She's in Asua. So why doesn't he have the rights over the properties? If she was in a suwa and it fell to her, you agree, she'd have the rights. So why not over here? She was in a rusa when it fell to her, but now she's in a suwa. Why shouldn't the husband have the rights to be able to block the sale, at least in part, that he gets to still have the rights to the payros? So Amalem, on this, Rabbi Gamliel said to them, we don't understand why, if they fall to her while she's in a suwa, that she doesn't have the right to go and sell them. So you're going to ask us, Elishatem Magalgal Aleno Seishanim, that the same din should apply, that they fell to her while she's in a rusa, that the same din should apply if she sells her while she's in a suwa? No, Rabbi Gamliel says that that's not the case. Now, the Gemara says, if you understand this price in the way we just said, it doesn't seem to jive with the Mishnah. Well, now we learned in our Mishnah that it said, Achelo Nises, the Nises, in the scenario in our Mishnah of this case where she acquired them while she was in Arusa, but now she's married and wants to sell them while she's in a suwa. She's fully married now, and she wants to sell them while she's in Arusa. In that situation, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Imochra V'nos Nakayim, he says, only B'di'evet, the Lashon of B'di'evet. If machra v'nosna, then b'di'evet is good. But he doesn't allow it l'chachila. But in the braisa, he seemed to allow it l'chachila. So how do you reconcile that? So Amar Zid, no. You have to go and change around the gear to the Mishnah. It's not im machra v'nosna kaim in the Mishnah. It should be read, tini, mocheres v'noseres kaim. Even l'chachila, she's allowed to sell it. This way, Rabbi Gamliel is consistent. The braisa and the Mishnah, he's saying the same thing. That's teretz number one. Teretz number two, Rav Papa Amar, a different teretz. Rav Papa says, lo kasha. There's no steer over here between the Raisa, which seems to imply that she's allowed to go and sell it l'chadchila if it fell to her while she's in Arusa, and now she's in a suwa, so she can sell it l'chadchila, according to Rabbi Gamliel, and the Mishnah, which seems to say she can only do that b'di'evet, but l'chadchila, he would say you can't go and sell it if it fell to her while she's in Arusa, and she sells it while she's in a suwa. So why is it not a kasha? Rav Papa Amar lo kasha, because there are two different opinions over here of Rabbi Gamliel. In the Mishnah, ha Rabbi Yehuda, alim the Rabbi Gamliel. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Rabbi Gamliel. Whereas in the Braisa, it's Rabbi Chanina, ha Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, alim the Rabbi Gamliel. So you have two different understandings of what Rabbi Gamliel says. You're right. Rabbi Yehuda holds that he only allows it b'di'evet. Whereas the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi is that Rabbi Gamliel would allow it even l'chadchila if it fell to her while she's in Arusa and she sells it while she's in Asua. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi's opinion, Rabbi Gamliel, is that you're allowed to go sell that in that situation l'chadchila. So that is the machlokis over here between the Braisa and the Mishnah. It's a difference between Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi's opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, and in our Mishnah it was Rabbi Yehuda's opinion of Rabbi Gamliel. Shmuel questions this and says, if that's true, the way you're understanding it now, that the Braisa is Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia's opinion, so then Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia can be Shammai. Then you've now allowed the sale, even l'chadchila, that's B'Shammai's opinion. It doesn't make sense to say that Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia is putting Rabbi Gamliel to holding like B'Shammai. B'Shammai's opinion in the presence of Beis Hillel is not considered a valid opinion. Why would Rabbi Gamliel want to posit like B'Shammai? Gemara says, Taki, you're right. Hachi Kama. That's not what Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi said. He holds there is no machlokis. Lo nechlaku be shama yo beis hillel al davar zeh. He says that Beis Hillel's opinion is also, lichat chila, if it fell to her while she's an arusa, she has the right to sell it even after the nisuin. Not only Beis Shammai, but even Beis Hillel says that, according to the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi's understanding of Rabban Gamliel. How do we pass it? Rabbi Shmuel, the Amr Tavayu, Rabbi Shmuel say, the halach is as follows. Any properties that fell to her before the erusin, or even properties or properties that fell to her after the erusin, if she now is in a suah, the nisase, so it doesn't make a difference how the properties came into her possession, whether they came to her possession pre-erusin or even post-erusin, if she's now in a suah, habal motzi miyad halakuchos, the husband has the right to go and stop the sale from being a full sale. The actual sale of the property itself goes through, but he gets to retain the rights to use the properties, the usufruction rights, all the time that his wife and he are still married. Habal motzi miyad lekuchos. He has the rights, once it's sold as a nesua, he fully has the rights to block that sale from going fully through, and he retains the usufruction rights on these properties while they're still married. Now, whose opinion is this? Wait a second, the word says, come on, this is the Loker Behuda, Loker Chanina Nechavya. This doesn't go with Rabbi Gamliel's opinion, not according to Behuda or according to Chanina Nechavya. So whose opinion is this? This is a new opinion that we're now introducing that says, if she sells it after the Nisuin, even Bidiyevet, the husband has the ability to go and say the sale is not a valid sale. So the word says, this is a third opinion, a new opinion. In who, this opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, the Amre ki Rabbi Seinu, they hold like Rabbi Seinu. Who is Rabbi Seinu? From the following Brisa, the Chachamim in the following Brisa, the Tanya. We learned this is that same Tosefta. This is now that Tosefta that we brought down from the very beginning. So this is a continuation of that Tosefta. Rabbi Seinu, Chazu, and the bottom line is at the end, the Chazal got together and they paskined. Bein shenof lo actual tisaris, whether the properties fell to her pre erusin or even bein shenof lo mishin tisaris, if they fell to her during the erusin stage, no difference. Venesis, if she's in a sua, exactly like Rabbi Shmuel said, this is the opinion of the Chachamim, habal motzi miyad lekuchos. The husband has the right to usufruction, and therefore he prevents the sale from being a full sale, and he gets to retain the usufruction rights. And that is how Rabbi Shmuel passed like this opinion of the Chachamim at the end of that Tosefta. Now we quote the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Mishanisis, once the woman, in our Mishnah we said, once she's in the suah, Elav, Elav, Modav, everybody agrees that the husband has the right to go and prevent the sale from being a full sale. He has the usufruction rights, the parents of their property, while they're still married. So more questions is to say, wait a second, this seems to be a much later takana, a famous takana from Usha, Lema, Tanina, the takana Usha. Are you telling me that our Mishnah, which is much earlier than the takana Usha was after the Sanhedrin had moved already, to different places. Twice it moved to Usha. So one of the times that the Sanhedrin was in Usha, it made the following takana, Biusha Hiskinu, they made the takana in Usha, the Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Biusha Hiskinu, in Usha, they made the following takana, Ha'isha Shemachua B'nichsi Melug B'chai Bala, if the woman sells any property she has that a Nichsi Melug. Again, Nichsi Melug are properties that came to her, they weren't evaluated as being ironclad guaranteed. They're not the Tzom Baras or properties that she brings into the marriage, the husband can do with it whatever he wants, he can sell it, destroy it, because he owes her $1,000. That property was evaluated at the end of that marriage, either through his death, Rechman al-Lusan, or through his divorce, Rechman al-Lusan of her, he has to give her back $1,000. It's ironclad. That's what's called Tzom Barzel. As opposed to Nichsei Melug, these are properties that he can pluck away at any point in time. In other words, he has the usufruction rights to these properties. So, Ha'isha Shemachu B'Nichsei Melug, if the woman sells these Nichsei Melug items, so if she sells them B'chai Bala during her husband's lifetime, Ha'bal Motz Mi'al Lekuchos, he has the right to go take them. The Lekuchos technically own those properties, but the husband has the right to go and take them during her lifetime while she's still married to him. He gets the right to take them. So this was a much later takana in Usha. So how can our Mishnah tell us the same thing? Our Mishnah seems to be saying, Mishanisis, Elam Elam Modim, that the husband has the right to go take it. Isn't that takana Usha? Someone says, no, there's a fine difference between the takana Usha and our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, which is earlier, Masnisin is just talking about B'chayeha Ulaperas. Our Mishnah is talking about during her lifetime, the husband has the right to go have those usufruction rights on those Nirsei Melug. He gets to pluck them. He gets to take the payros. That's what our Mishnah is talking about. In the Takanas Usha, they're referring to a different aspect of this. Takanas Usha was dealing begufa shokarka. What is the status of that karka? Ula achamisa. Who owns that after her death? So it isn't inherit. Normally the husband would inherit it. But here, since she had the right to sell it, so the principal, the property itself, actually belongs to that person once she dies, because she did have the right to go and sell it. So that would be the basic din. But as Rashi explained, what they were masakin in Usha is that din doesn't apply. That even after her death, when theoretically that sale should have gone through, they were masakin in Usha that the sale doesn't go through. That, of course, is only if she dies first. If, in fact, the husband dies first, so then in that situation the sale does go through, and those people that she sold it to would get the property from that point in time, and if she were to subsequently die, her inheritors would inherit it. No, the people that she sold the property to would, in fact, get that property. So this is all a big sugya in the Gemara in Bava Basra, which we're not going to go further into right now, but there's a slight difference between our Mishnah, which is talking about during her lifetime, and the Peros, and the Takanas Usha, which talks about after her death, who owns that property. Okay. Now we quote the Mishnah again. It said, Rabbi Shimon, at the end of the Mishnah, it said, Rabbi Shimon cholek bein nechasim. Rabbi Shimon made a difference as to what the type of the properties were, as we pointed out. And Rashi brings it down over here. There are yesh nechasim shemich rakayim, that there's some that the sale is a valid sale. The yesh nechasim shemich rabotel, and there's some that the sale is not considered a valid sale. And he based it upon whether the husband knew about it or the husband didn't know about it. If the husband knew about it, so Rashi points out, the amanas osa nechasim, Nasa, he married her because he knew that she had these properties. Lefikach michra batel. Therefore, it was his expectation that he would get those properties, and therefore the sale is batel if she goes and sells them. Because hayomitzapeh shetipo law osa yerusha. He knew that this was coming to her, and it was, so to say, that was part of the reason that he married her. Not, maybe not the most noble or romantic reasons to marry her, but nevertheless, that is considered, therefore, something that he knows about, and therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, that type of a sale doesn't go through. But if he doesn't know about it, that type of sale does go through. So the Gemara questions this and says, what are Elohein Yiduin ve'Elohein She'en Yidum? Define for me things that are known and things that are not known. So we have two different opinions as to what this is. The first one is Rav Yosef Ruchanina. I'm Rav Yosef Ruchanina. He says, Yiduin means mikarkoi. It means something that is land. Land everybody knows about. And therefore, that is considered that he was expecting those properties because they were land and he knew about them. As opposed to she'ena yidun, when we say something is not yidun, that is referring to metaltle. That is referring to non-karka properties, movable properties, that he's not 100% certain he's going to get. So that's called enon yidun. The husband doesn't necessarily know about those. They're not as well known. We said many times karka is something that you can take a lien on because it's well known. The sale of karka, the status of karka is well known. Whereas without them, they're easily hideable. They're easily movable. And therefore, they're not as well known. So that's the first definition that we have according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Second definition is according to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, El Yidun, hey, no, why is there a difference between karka and metaltlin? Everybody knows about this. So yeah, she had a car that she was going to inherit. So that's metaltlin, but everybody knows about that car. So therefore, both of those are considered Yidun, whether it's karka or metaltlin. Elohein She'en Yidun. So what is the definition of Einin Yidun? So that is something, Koshi Yosheves Kan, she is living over here in New York, and she gets an inheritance from South Dakota. So nobody knew about that property in South Dakota. Nobody knew about that relative that she had in South Dakota. And therefore, that is considered something that the husband wasn't expecting. And therefore, that is something that she has the right to go and sell. That's Rabbi Shimon's understanding, according to Rabbi Yochanan. And we have a Braisa in support of this opinion of Rabbi Yochanan over Rabbi Yosef Chanina. The Braisa says, Tani Nami Yochli, what is the definition of Elohein She'en Yidun? What's the definition of something that wasn't known to the husband? Koshi Yoshev is Khan. She lives in New York. And she has properties that fall to her from South Dakota, from someplace far away, Medina Sayam, overseas, that the husband doesn't know about and is not therefore expecting them. And therefore, she is entitled to go and sell them. Maisa Shoya. Hai Issa, there once was a woman. The Boya, the Tavrichinu, Lenichsa Migabra. She had certain properties that she didn't want her husband to have. So therefore, what did she do before she got married? Ksavinhu Livrata. She wrote them over as a gift to her daughter. She had a daughter from a previous marriage. So this is a second marriage. She didn't want her husband to inherit these properties. She wanted her children to have the properties. So she wrote them over to her daughter. But she didn't want her daughter to fully have it. She only wrote them over to her daughter to keep them out of the possession of her husband. And then she got married in Tzava. But then, the Igrisha, she got divorced. And now she wanted her properties back from her daughter. Returned to Ayin Tessa with Aleph. Daughter, unfortunately, doesn't want to give them back. So what does she do? Also, the Kamei, the Rav Nachman. So she goes to the Beis Din of Rav Nachman, say, listen, this shtar that I gave to my daughter for these properties, it was a, you know, a legal fiction. I didn't really give those properties over to my daughter. I gave them to her to basically keep them out of the reach of my husband, so my husband shouldn't have them. And therefore, I now want them back that I'm divorced from that husband. So as Rashi says, she goes to the basin of Rav Nachman, also the coming of Rav Nachman, litboa et bita. She goes to take her daughter to court, lahafzula and chasim, to give her back those properties. Vabas will see a shtar, matana, and the daughter brings out the shtar matanasa. She brings out the shtar that the mother gave it to her. And what does Rav Nachman do? Back to the Gemara, kare, back to Rashi, but kare Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman rips up the shtar. It's called the shtar mavrachta. It's to, so to say, to escape from her husband's. So this clearly was a legal fiction. It wasn't intended to be given over to the daughter. And Rav Nachman ripped up the shtar and returned the property to the mother. How can he do this? Also, Rav Anan, the Kamei de Marukva. Rav Anan came to Marukva. We had Rav Anan and Marukva the other week with Huna Huna. Remember, he called Rav Huna Huna. In any event, Rav Anan goes to Marukva, and he says to him, I don't understand, Rabbi, Amalei, he says to Marukva, Chazi Mar, do you see what Rav Nachman did? And he calls him Nachman Chaklo. Chaklo is like a sharecropper, a poor person. This Nachman, who's a poor person, Rashi explains, he goes with Chaklo, ain't no balki bedinim, he's a poor person, he doesn't know the dinim. Marukva, Abbasinhava, and Marukva was the expert. So he went to Marukva and said, how could Rav Nachman go rip up this lady's shtar? Hechi mikra shtari dinshi. He just rips up a woman's shtar. This daughter had a valid shtar. How could Rav Nachman go rip it up? So Marukva says, something else is going over here. Just like last week when he didn't get the full picture, so he asked Rav Anan, what's the full picture? Amalei, Emelizi, my friend, tell me what's going on over here. So Gufa, do you have the Hechi Hava? What exactly happened over here? So Amalei, so Rav Anan tells him exactly what happened, and Hochi Vochi Hava, this is what happened. He tells him the whole story, this is Shtar Mavrachta, and Amalei, Mavuka says, whoa, Shtar Mavrachas Ko Amris, you're telling me that this was a Shtar Mavrachas, this was a special type of a Shtar that was meant to keep the properties out of the reach of the husband, but it was clear that it wasn't given over to the daughter. Such a Shtar, Hochi Amar Rav Chaniloi Bar Idi Amar Shmuel, this is what Rav Chaniloi Bar Idi said the name of Shmuel, Mora Anani. He said that I'm a Mora No. Shmuel was given Rishus, Rashi says, by the Reish Gelusa to go and judge, adjudicate such cases. As Rashi says, not Talti Rishus me Reish Gelusa, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, the Mahani Rishusa, Velo Yehovi Rishusa, Ela Lebaki Bedover. They only gave permission to judge such cases and be free from any liability to people that were expert. So he said, listen, I'm a Mora Ra. I'm an expert on this. And I say, Shmuel said, Im yavo shtar mavrachas liyodi, if such a shtar would come to my hands, ekra enu, I would rip it up. Exactly as Rav Nachman did. So, Marukva tells Rav Anan that Rav Nachman was 100% correct. Nu, Amalei Rav Rav Nachman, Rav says to Rav Nachman, why? Time of my, why did you rip up such a shtar? Because the lo shavik inish nafshei v'yov lachrini. Because under general circumstances, we understand the person wouldn't leave himself totally destitute by giving away his property to somebody else. Obviously, this was a legal fiction, and we would return it. But do we say the same thing for his daughter? Hani mili lachrini avol abrati yahiva. But maybe for his daughter, he really gave it over. The woman really gave it over in this situation to another person. If the woman had written this legal fiction shtar mavrachas to another person, we would take it back and rip it up. We would give the property back and rip up the shtar. But maybe to her daughter, she really meant it. It's her daughter. So Nachman says, no, even for a daughter, afilu hachi, bimakom brata nafsho adifula, even for a daughter, she is still considered herself to take care of herself, her own needs, ahead of her daughter's needs. More questions. It says, Meisvei, harosha tetavriach nichosea mibala, if a woman wishes to go and hide away her property from her husband, the husband shouldn't have the rights to it, what should she do? Ketzadi osa. So the Brisa says as follows. This is what the woman should do. Kosev ishtar pasim. Shtar pasim essentially is a shtar mavrachas over here. The same idea that you're writing a document that a shtar pasim is written to somebody to give them a false line of credit, so to say. Oh, yes, look, so-and-so owes me $100,000. Look at this document and he says he owes you the money. Now, you only do this with a close friend, so it looks like you have money because, obviously, you didn't lend him $100,000, and that IOU that he's holding, that he has a line of credit for you for $100,000 is not real. So, a shtar pasim, shtar mavrachas are similar ideas. They're legal fictions. So, kosev shtar pasim liachayim. If a person wants to write a shtar mavrachas, this woman doesn't want her husband to have the rights to the property, so you write such a shtar, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and it will work. The Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim rotsu mitzachipa. This person who she writes the shtar mavrachas to, who now has these properties, can laugh all the way to the bank. As Rashi says, if he wishes to, he can laugh at her. Mitzachipa umachsit b'hen olamis. This makabel, he's allowed to go and take it to the bank. He owns this property. He has a shtar. Rotsu mitzachipa. If he doesn't want to give it back, so he doesn't have to. So what should the woman do? So Galil didn't say this. The Chachamim say asher tichlo. She has to write in the shtar. Nehiom. This shtar takes effect from today. But only only at that point in time that I wanted to take effect. In other words, if the husband were to come to her and say, hey, that's my property, he says, no, listen, I want the other guy to take it in effect, and therefore it's as if the property was outside your possession before we got married. And if the husband doesn't come, and the guy says, I'm keeping this property, he says, no, I don't want it to take effect. So this way, mimanashach, she retains the property. So time of the kosher lehachi, according to the Chachamim, it only works if she wrote this in. Halo kosher lehachi kenani lokeach. If you didn't write this in, so then it is a valid shtar. So in the shtar of Rachas that Shmuel is talking about, it wasn't written in. So how could this in fact be a shtar that can be ripped up? So it depends on how much was written in. If everything was written in, then it was clear that it's a legal fiction. But if only part of it was written in, so then it's not so clear it's a legal fiction, and then it's a valid shtar. And the person, if he wants to, mitzachibo, can keep it, even though he said originally that I would do you a favor. Rashi further explains, and he says, in Dira Maskel Habakula, he says, Kiyama Shmuel Lokoni, when Shmuel said that the woman that gave over the property to the daughter, and that shtar was an invalid shtar, it's a shtar of rachas that can be ripped up, because in that situation, when she writes over in this document, kol nechosea, she didn't leave anything for herself. If discouraged, if she were to get divorced, she would have nothing. So Anan Sade, we are witnesses. It's self-evident, the lo gomra o miknayit, that she certainly didn't give it over fully with a full sale. And that which we said, that yes, the person who gets the shtar could run all the way to the bank and laugh, is only when they got part of it, because in that situation, it's not self-evident that she wasn't giving it over fully, because she left some for herself. So therefore, that's the rationale. That's what Rosera says. Mara says, wait a second. V'i lo kinoni lo keach, if you're telling me that in this situation where it's not fully given over to her because all the property was written over, so therefore it's considered as if it still belongs to the woman, so then nikninu baal, so then why doesn't the husband go and acquire it? Seemingly, you can't have the best of both worlds. You can't have it that it's written over to the daughter in regards to the husband, but it's not written over to the daughter when it comes to the woman herself. So which way is it? Someone says, no, it's possible to have the best of both worlds, because Amar Abaye says, this is like Asom when they're written over to the daughter, so the husband has basically put them out of his mind. Asom kinuchosim she'en yidum l'bal. It's as if it was from a foreign country. It was property he didn't expect to get. He wasn't counting on it. He wasn't expecting it. So therefore, if you hold Valiba, there'll be Shimo, that such properties are not belonging to the husband. So then this shtar mivrachas, where it's totally written over to her, can effectively have the best of both worlds for her. It doesn't go to the possession of her husband, but she gets it back if she were to get divorced, Rachman Lusan, she would get the property back from her daughter. Okay, let's go weiter. It's a relatively short shiur so far today, so we'll finish off till the end of the Omer. We learn the next Mishnah. Naflu al-kisafim, if the woman gets money, she inherited money, and now she's a married woman, the money belongs to her husband in what way? So what do you do? This is like nichsei malug, but it's money. So what do you do with this money? Yilokach bem karka, you go and buy property with it, land that the husband will be able to get, the usufruction rights he'll get, who ochal peros, the husband will benefit from eating the peros of that property. This inherited money is like nichsei malug, so you invest it in property, the husband gets to eat the benefits of that property, but the wife owns the principal, like regular nichsei malug. What happens if the wife inherited peros? Peros hatzlushim in a karka. The wife inherited a whole bunch of apples. She inherited apples. They were already harvested. So what do you do with these apples that she inherits? It's like inheriting money. Yilokach bem karka. You sell the apples and you take that money and you purchase with karka. Well, her peros. And the husband has the usufruction rights from that karka. He gets to eat the peros from that karka that they purchased. If they, however, inherited peros hamukhubar mekarka, if the woman inherited peros that were attached to the ground, so they're still attached to the ground, so Rameya says, shamano so kama hi yofa be peros, the kama hi yofa below peros. You have to make an evaluation of it. They're not ready to be plucked, but they've already started growing, so she has, so to say, half of the rights to those peros that have already grown, but the husband has the rights to the rest of the peros that will grow. So what do you do in this situation? So you evaluate the field, how much it's worth right now with half-grown fruit in it. And you evaluate the field, how much it's worth without the half-grown fruit in it. And that difference is the value of those half-grown fruit, which she's entitled to. Umosar, And with this money, the difference between what the field is worth without this half-grown fruit or wheat in it and the full and the value of the field with the half-grown wheat in it, you take that difference in the money and you invest that. That's like she inherited money. You buy additional karka with that value for all peros, but the husband gets to keep the entire peros because he's already paid for the part that, so to say, she owns as principal that was already half-grown in the field. So that's already been accounted for by purchasing with money, the mosar, the extra field, and this way the husband gets the entire peros from this crop right now, and all the future crops he'll get the entire peros. So yilochakvim karka v'ulchal peros. I hope that was clear. Basically what we're saying is that you have to evaluate the half-grown field. It belongs to her. The future growth, that belongs to him. So you evaluate how much that half-growth field is worth. You take that money and you purchase additional karka with it, and then the husband gets 100% of the payros because he's already paid for the half that belonged to her, and the other half belongs to him as the growth now is in his possession during his domain. Chum disagree with Rameh. Chum Rameh, no. Anything that's still attached to the ground, we view that as his. That's considered peros. It hasn't yet been plucked, but when it does get plucked, it's his. He gets the peros. But anything that was already detached from the ground at the time that it was inherited is shalot. That belongs to her, and you go and take that money. He has the right to go and take that money and buy fields with it. But he only gets to eat the peros from that field. The principal of that field belongs to her. Should the marriage end, either through a death or divorce, Rachmana Litzlan, that field goes back to her. The Mishnah continues, Rav Shimon Omer, Malkum Shiofa Kocha Bechnisasa, Hura Kocha Bitsiasa, and Malkum Shura Kocha Bechnisasa, Yofa Kocha Bitsiasa. Ketza. Now, what did I just say? So Rav Shimon is telling us that we always look at things in the similar way. We always look at the field the same way when it comes in, so to say, when she inherits it, and the husband now has the rights to use usufruction, and we look at it the same way. Whenever we looked at it that way, we're going to look at it the same way when the field leaves the husband's possession, i.e., if the husband divorces or Rachman al-San, the husband dies, so the field goes back to her. How do we view these peros in it? So we view them the same way. Where it was originally beneficial to him, on the entry in, it will be detrimental to him, so to say, on the way out, and vice versa. If it was to her advantage on the way in, it will be to her disadvantage on the way out. In other words, we always treat it the same way. So, Ketzad, what do we mean by this? So, for example, if you had Peres Winter Rabbi Shimon, Peres HaMechubar Mlekarka, if there were produce that was attached to the ground at the time that she inherited it. So we said, b'chnisasa shelo. So we view that, we just said, like the Chachamim say, that he gets entitled to anything that's mechubar to the ground. It's already considered over here peros. So likewise, u'b'tziyasa, when it leaves, shelo. That's considered hers when it leaves. We view it the same way. Just like it was considered his when they come in, it's considered hers when it leaves. Likewise, v'atlushim and akarka are considered b'chnisasa shelo. Anything that was already detached from the ground when she inherited, that was considered hers. So too, if it's detached from the ground and then he divorces her, u'b'tziyasa shelo, it belongs to him as well. So we view it the same way. What to his benefit at the beginning will be to his detriment at the end, but it was to her benefit at the beginning will be to her detriment at the end. It works both ways. We view it the same way, going in, going out. Sometimes it'll be to his advantage, sometimes it'll be to her advantages, but we're consistent throughout. That's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, and that's the end of the Mishnah. Let's just do a little bit of the Gemara. Pshita, the Gemara starts and tells us that when we're talking about buying land, she had inherited money, or we have extra money over here from the valuation of the field, and we have to go buy land for it, so she'll have the principal, and he will have the payrolls. So it's pshita, Gemara says it's obvious that if the choices in terms of buying the lands are one of them wants, actually it doesn't make a difference which one wants it. She could want it or he want it, wants to buy a field, ara, and the other one wants to buy a residential real estate, ubate. So the field is going to be, Rashi says, a more permanent type of a income-producing land. It doesn't get used up, whereas the house, so that land that the house is on will devaluate potentially because the house deteriorates over time. So if the choice is between buying ara bati, whichever one wants to buy ara, they will win. Ara will win. So that's making a difference. The husband wants to buy the ara and the woman wants the bati, or the husband wants to buy the bati and the woman wants to buy the ara. The one who wants the ara always wins. That's the choice over here. That's a more permanent usage of the money, a better investment for the money to buy a field rather than real estate, which you could build a house on. If the choice was, however, bati v'dikle, to buy land that you can put a house up on, or to buy date palm trees, dikle or dekolim, or palm trees, so then, that grow dates on them, so then the choice is bati. Despite whichever one wants it, the choice is that you get the bati no matter what. It doesn't make a difference if the husband wants the bati, or the wife wants the bati, or the other one wants the dikle, so we always buy the bati in that situation. That's a more better usage of this money. If the choice is between dikle, these date palm trees, the ilani, and other fruit-bearing trees, so then dikle. Dikle, we're not there, a more permanent type of a resource. If the choice is, however, between Ilone and Gufne, between any type of fruit bearing tree and vines, so then Ilone, the trees will win out because that's a more permanent type of a income. It's more steady. It won't deteriorate so much as the vines. Then he more continues and says, if the woman inherited Iba, what's Iba? Rashi says is Yar Lachtoch Eitzim. This is a forest for which is useful food. It's not fruit-bearing trees, but it's just wood. These are Ilani Srak, but it's good for wood. So if you inherit it in Iba, Zardisa. So these are trees, again, that are Srak. Rashi says, Ilano Shel Uzardin, V'lo Hayu Pirion Choshevlen, V'kotzen Ozel Eitzim. These are non-fruit-bearing trees, or the fruits that they have are very unimportant, and people don't really eat those fruits, and therefore they're used essentially for wood. So if the woman inherits a forest of non-fruit-bearing trees, and or upira the kavri, and she inherits a sort of a pond that has fish inside of it. Rashi says, chafiru shel dogim, a pond that's dug out that has fish inside of it. So are these considered over here principal, or are these considered fruits? Do we consider the wood over here as the fruits of this field, and therefore the halacha of fruits are applying over here? Or do we consider this as a field, and the halacha of field applies over here? Similarly with the fish in the pond. Do we consider the fish in the pond as the principal, or do we consider them as peros? So amrilo peri, v'amrilo karna. This is a machlokes. Some say we view the wood and the fish as pera, their benefits, so to say. They're the growths that come out from this karka that she inherited, either the forest or the chafira, this pond. And others say no, they're considered the principal. That's the wood, that's the fish. Those are no different than the karka. They're the principal. What's the bottom line? Where it says, klaldenosa, this is the rule. Gizo machlif, if it's something that will go and regenerate. So if you have something that replenishes itself, such as a tree that bears fruit, so the fruits grow this year, then the fruits will go next year, then the fruits will go the year after that, that's called gizo machlif. So it replenishes, it regenerates. So in this situation, so that is considered, the tree is the karka, and the fruits are considered peros. So then the fruits in that situation are considered pera. However, engizomachlif, if it's not the type of thing that replenishes, this is non-fruit-bearing trees. If you cut this tree down and use the wood, that's it. It's gone. There's no more. So then that's called gizo is not machlif, engizomachlif, so it doesn't regenerate, it doesn't replenish itself. So then in that situation, karna, we view the tree as karen and not as peros. This is a good break point. We caught up Baruch Shem another amud, and with this we conclude today's share.